This is a Hot Pie Media original. Hi, this is Deb, and this is my podcast.
You're listening to the Deb O'Keefe Podcast, the podcast where Deb O'Keefe doesn't know anything.
This podcast is brought to you by Early Bird CBD Gummies. These guys have become really good friends to me. The gummies, I mean. The Early Bird guys, yeah, they're nice too. But the CBD THC gummies are great. I, in fact, actually gifted someone, a friend of mine, a bag the other day because they were stressed out. They've got a really stressful job and they're trying not to drink too much alcohol right now because obviously, as we know, alcohol leaves you with so many bad side effects. And this is one of the reasons I enjoy Early Bird CBD too, because I want to have fun, but I don't want to get lit. I want to be able to wake up in the morning and go to the gym without a hangover. And that's why Early Bird CBD formulated these with a micro dose of THC, letting you relax, letting you chill out, letting you have a good fun time with your friends while you pregame. Whatever it might be, you're going to get a light buzz and you're not going to get completely wasted. That is the jam for me. So go to earlybirdcbd.com/deb. You get 20% off everything on your first order. The flavors are great and it's naturally derived Delta 9 THC from hemp. Delta 9, guys. That is the operative word right there. Order your Early Bird CBD gummies today at earlybirdcbd.com. That gets you to the website.com/deb. Gets you 20% off everything online. That's earlybirdcbd.com/deb. Yeah, you know what? I don't know anything except I'm not feeling 100% today. You guys have to bear with me. I think I sound a little scratchy, but that doesn't make any sense. there it was. I got my booster a couple of days ago and my COVID booster, that is, not like a booster seat, but I got my COVID booster and almost exactly like 10 hours after I had it done, it hit me. And if you haven't had any side effects from your booster or your COVID jab yet, just be warned, it may come with your booster. Oh my God, I felt pretty much like death. I've still just right now, I just got a lingering headache, which is good, but why does it have to feel so nasty? But I reckon that's what COVID feels like, right? But obviously way worse if you're in hospital. The body aches, the bone aches. I felt like my hips and my back and my legs were just, I couldn't keep warm. Everything hurt. My skin was sensitive. I've still got a little residual headache, but that was like lightning bolts in one temple through my eyes, out the other. I was light sensitive, sound sensitive, and really, really thirsty. I've been chugging electrolytes for the last couple of days. So that's what I'd recommend. If you've got your booster coming up, stock up the house with whether it's like electrolyte packs or Pedialyte. Man, do you ever feel like an alcoholic when you walk into a store and just pick up like three bottles of Pedialyte? The massive ones. But yeah, don't worry about anybody judging you. Just go and get the Pedialyte or like I said, the little liquid IV things. Have some food in the house as well. I forgot to for the booster. I did for my second jab when I got sick and I just, you know, would crawl to the fridge and grab something that was pre-made. But I actually had to call a friend to come and bring me some tacos. So thank you for that. That was well needed. I don't really have a big appetite, but I was out of it. Oh, another nice thing. If you happen to have one of these old lady devices, this will help you out big time. I have an infrared heating mat. It might not necessarily be an old lady thing, but I have a bad back. I've got like some weird arthritis disease, psoriatic arthritis makes my hands hurt. So, I got this mat a few years ago that heats up and it's just great in the winter time. But when you've got COVID symptoms from your booster jab, I laid on that. It was so amazing. It warms the blanket up. I took the warmed blanket to bed with me, put it inside my bed under my duvet. And then I woke up with all my animals like piled around me. It was really nice. It's like they knew I was sick. So bear with me today. If I'm a bit groggy, a bit out of it, I apologize. I'm on the tail end of feeling like crap, but just a warning, make sure you stock up with all the things I mentioned if you're getting your booster jab because you're going to feel like crap. Today's guest was a last minute lovely surprise. I wasn't expecting to have the honor to talk to this guy today, but he was in town. He said, let's make it work. So here he is, musician, writer, songwriter, entrepreneur, I would say as well, dad, granddad, all around fun guy, if I can say that. Chris Jagger. Welcome to the show, Chris Jagger.
Thank you very much.
Now you're letting me down with the fun guy thing.
Thank you very much, Deborah.
You're welcome. Yeah, seriously, thanks so much for making time, because I know you're in Austin, just a quick flying visit. And you've got friends here, longtime friends, and I know you've been spending time with. I feel like there might be some other relative of yours that was in town this weekend that was the reason you were here.
Oh, maybe. Yeah.
Just that's that, right. That little thing.
The guy in the blues cover band.
That's right. and so I'm glad you made the time for us. I wasn't expecting this today, but we had a fun event last weekend that I had so much fun being involved with, and to see how many people came to see you, to hear your new track, to get a cover of your new book signed was pretty cool.
Well, there wasn't much happening in town that day. You know?
Right. Yeah. If you know Austin, you know there's never anything going on any given weekend. If you want to just hold up your book for me, if you will, because when I first saw this the other day, I love it. I love the fact, and this is just a silly aesthetic thing on my behalf. Not only is it a really cute picture of you, and is that your dog?
Yeah.
And I didn't know if that was a stunt dog.
No, obviously my popsicle, puppy.
He's very cute. What's his name?
Well, I like to call him Popsicle. But
Popsicle.
They called him Jake, but I mean, I just called him puppy.
with dogs, I think if you're a real dog person, your dog doesn't just have its one given name.
Well, over the years, I've had lurchers usually, you know, which is a kind of crossbred greyhound.
Yeah.
I've had three since I was in my 20s. I never had a small dog, but then I got given a sort of staffy one from one of my sons. He couldn't look after it. Then I've been given another staffy I've been having to look after. So I thought I can't have another big dog because I'm too old. It's too much work. So I'll get a little dog, which is about a bit of a handbag sized dog.
How did you feel about that? Were you worried about him being embarrassing?
Well, Jack Russells are all right because they're quite feisty.
They are.
And he's quite a good ratter.
Well, that's what they're for. That was
so,
what they were
yeah,
both for.
The only regret, I could have had two of them, a pair. And if you want to do ratting, you kind of need a pair because one flushes it out and the other one gets it.
But this, you're not doing this for sport, right? Just because you have rats.
Well, everyone has. You're never more than a few feet from a rat, are you? That's what they say.
I don't know. I saw rats everywhere.
Well, I've got a place in the country.
You've got rats.
And we've got chickens and stuff like that. So the rats is a perennial problem.
Yeah.
So Jack Russell's what you want. And then they just sort of find their way in the undergrowth and pop up somewhere at night. And then you go outside to do a job, whether it's to clear something or go and see the sheep or whatever. And they're just right there.
Really?
And they're into everything. You know, I mean, lurchers are more laid back animals. They crash on the floor and they're not really a problem, and I've always loved lurchers. But you know, going out, I mean, I'm not into sort of hunting anymore. I used to go out and they used to catch deer and stuff like that.
The lurchers did,
yeah, which is quite a your responsibility, because then you end up having to kill the deer yourself.
Oh, that's awful.
Then you've got to take it back, and then you've got to hang it. Then you've got a gypsy. I got the lurcher from a gypsy up in the Mendips.
Who had taught the lurcher how to hunt? And,
well, no, I've had lurchers before, so I know all about it. So she was orca. She was white and black. And so he taught me how to, you know, hang and then how to dissect the deer. So because it's quite an,
face right now is a bit.
Well, I mean, you know, that's how it goes.
Yeah.
And it's quite, but there's nothing wrong with it, but it's a fair amount of work, even though you get a reward out of it. So I really didn't want to have that happen anymore. And then my staffy, his arch enemy were badgers. Do you have, they have badgers in
not,
they don't have
not them, here do in Texas, but they might have them in other places. Like the Northwest is a little more sort of like our, climate,
but
and
people
everything.
Know what badgers are.
Yeah, but they think of them as honey badgers, which are really evil and white. Put a picture of a honey badger up on the screen, if you will, Colton, next to a regular nice badger. I always think of the badger from Wind in the Willows, who was just delightful.
Well, badgers, I quite like them, but you know, then this staffy it was sweet as pie, but he'd attack badgers, and that was the worst possible fight because they lock them in their jaws, and that fight could be going on for an hour.
Do the badgers have rabies? No, we haven't got rabies TB. In the UK, have we? TB.
Hopefully, I haven't got rabies without TB. So, ugh. You know, that was another thing. But I mean, you see, the thing is, you have to, you know, at least you've got some dogs in your property, because if you've got no dogs and nothing, you've got foxes, you've got badgers and stuff, they will come right up to your house.
Well, yeah, you've got sheep and chicken.
They'll dig holes in your lawn. So the dogs keep them a little bit at bay. So, and also, obviously, they bark if someone, I mean, you know, in a country, you know, we're, our place is like wide open. We don't, and you know, in England, we don't have guns. No. Nobody has guns. Well, I don't have guns. It's such a complicated thing to have a gun.
I think as a landowner, possibly you might be able to, right?
You could do, but it's so complicated and you've got to have
it. Do you?
Yeah, because one time I had two dogs attack my sheep and I had nothing.
Oh, two stranger dogs.
Yeah, they just came on the property. Rottweilers, you know, and I was going, well, if I was in America, I'd just take my shotgun down and sort of give them a blast. But, you know,
Chris, I've always dreamed of living in the country, but you've just killed that dream completely now. I don't want to have to.
Well, you can do it on whatever terms you want.
Oh, God.
But, you know, living in the country, it's quite hard work. There's a lot of unpleasant jobs to be done. But, you know, that's part and parcel of it. And country people, you know, I mean, I wasn't born in the country. The thing about living in the country where I am is the thing is there's people that have animals and like animals. And if you live in the country, you kind of are, you know, got horses or you got cows or you got sheep or whatever. That's the common denominator, because then the locals, if you look after animals well, that you get respect. The one thing that you won't get respect for if you mistreat animals, that's a sort of unforgivable thing.
I feel that way in life in general. I don't live in the country. Yeah. Did they look at you a bit funny then? Like, oh, who's this city boy coming into our country, being a poser with his sheep?
I mean, I don't quite have the money to be able to sort of, you know, be a fancy kind of farmer. But I live very close to a very character, a very good, interesting character called Roger Wilkins. And he has a cider barn.
Oh, does he speak all Somerset-y like that?
He speaks like that. Elbion. Oh. When you walk in there, they don't say, how are you? They say, Elbion.
Oh, I don't even know what that one is.
How be on. How be. LB.
Oh, I like that.
The old talk like that.
Oh, I do like that.
All right. Yeah. That's right, isn't it?
That's lovely. Nice bit of scrumpy for lunch.
And he makes cider, which in America they don't, what do they call it?
They do have cider. They call it hard cider if it's alcoholic, but it's not, and it's certainly not like West Country cider.
It's definitely alcoholic. It's like 7% something.
It's pretty
high. So you only have it in half pints. And he's very old fashioned. It's very traditional. And I don't think anywhere like him left anymore.
Is that right?
And you can sit around. He hasn't been closed for one day during the virus.
Outdoors just selling
stuff? It's in the barn. Well, he sells fruit and vegetables.
Oh, right.
And cheese and, you know, whatever, other stuff.
And he just said, F the government.
No. You're allowed to stay open because he's selling food.
Right.
Cider, see, so hasn't been closed for one day. So people sit there. And they have a glass, samples, that's all right, as samples. And they smoke fags. You know, like
in the barn we're selling
food. Yeah, nobody says anything about smoking fags. That was banned.
That's cigarettes, Americans.
So I'm only 100 yards from Roger, then I got to know Roger. And Roger is quite a legend in the countryside because of everyone comes there and they bring their apples there and he presses the apples. Like,
oh, they bring to make the cider.
Yeah, he has a certain amount of apples, but then a lot of the apples are brought in there. So everybody knows Roger. And you go down there and you say, Roger, I suppose you've got a sort of, you know, 12-foot gate with have a look down the bottom. If there's one there, you can have it. Oh, well, give me £20, you know, it's like that. He knows everyone.
He's the go-to man.
He's the go-to man. And in America, you'd call it rednecks. They're rednecks, basically. They don't want to be told what to do by nobody. And, you know, they kind of make up their own kind of how they want to live and they don't like outsiders. So they're sort of like rednecks. So once I was in with Roger, which obviously I was, because I go down and then drink cider and that. You're all right.
You're all right.
Oh, Chris, all right. You're all right. You got a dog. All right. You got this pickup truck. You're all right. Yeah. You know, and then I tell you why I used to play there. Every year I do a gig in July with playing with my band. He said, oh, bring your band down from London. And he paid me quite well. And it was £20 to come in, as much cider as you want to drink.
Oh, that's lovely, that is.
Jack will roast a couple of pigs, right? And so it was absolutely jammed. I said, Roger, do you want a poster? Oh, there won't be no need for that. There'll be plenty there. Don't you worry.
Word of mouth.
And we would play like kind of Zydeco. We, you know, we played sort of Cajun stuff, Charlie on the accordion, fiddle, drums, guitar, bass. And by the end of the evening, everyone, because all there was cider. You couldn't say, I'll have a vodka and tonic. No. Everyone's drinking cider. And quite a lot of it.
And it's quite strong.
So by the end, everyone was just absolutely steaming. And so the whole place would be a riot. It was a brilliant gig. I tried to get someone to film it, and he packed his cameras away because the people were throwing cider around. It was so kind of wild, you know, just sitting on straw bales and stuff.
This sounds made up.
I did that for about 8 years, that gig. So anyone that came to that gig, those gigs, it was sort of legendary,
yeah,
in the area.
It sounds like it. And you've got to be in the know to know.
It's all word of mouth.
Yeah.
So from that point of view, I've been accepted. And then you sit there and you realize, because when I first arrived, of course, there were a lot of old boys, old timers, some of which you could hardly understand.
Mm.
And then now I'm sitting there and I realize, well, I'm the old timer.
Oh, yeah.
I'm the old boy. And what happens is that, you know, people come in. So you're sitting there, Roger's not there, because it's not really like a shop. He's out counting. Where's Roger? Well, he's out counting the cows. You know, he's having his tea, he's counting the cows, whatever like that. So someone will come in, they say, what's happening? So I'll go, drink. Hey, all right. Do you want sweet, medium, or dry? So
just get back behind.
So
them.
I just put, no, there's no bar. It's just barrels.
Bottles. Oh, barrels.
There's no
really?
Bottles.
Oh,
it's no, not right. Bottled. It's just out of the barrel.
Brilliant.
So I will pour it, and so I'll give it to them. Then they think I'm the sort of owner. I say, no, I'm just a drinker. You know, and they say, well, should I pay for it? And I say, well, no, what do you want? Cheese? Do you want some this, that, the other? Or you, I go and pour them the cider in containers to take
it
away.
Home.
So
you got a part-time job now then. Put that on your CV.
So anyway, that's where I live. It's on a little ridge. It's a little bit of old-fashioned Somerset that now is kind of disappeared, as you know, with modern stuff. I mean, Roger goes, there was some bloke, he came over from America. He saw about it on internet.
Oh, bless.
I mean, Roger's got a mobile phone that he hardly uses.
Of course.
But that's all. Oh, he said, he can't be bothered with it all. There's too much to do in life, you know. So, yeah. And the funny thing is, he's exactly the same age as me.
Really?
Yeah.
Just a completely different life, country life.
But we get on well. And, you know, I've been there over 20 years. So you are kind of accepted. And so that's quite a nice aspect of living down there, even though they're kind of pretty much dyed in the wool rednecks. You can't change their minds about anything.
No, not about anything.
So you don't even go there.
No, you wouldn't want to try. It wouldn't be worth it.
If you started talking about women's lib or something.
Women's lib. That's just a funny term to me. But yeah, I get it. No, you're right. It's like your old granddad, you know, who still says words that he might have said in the 50s to describe people's ethnicities. You could tell him until you're blue in the face that we don't say that anymore, granddad, but it's not going to make any difference.
And of course, in Somerset had a famous band called the Wurzels.
Yeah.
Who had hit some hits. One of their hits was Drink Up Thy Cider. Drink
tell
Up Thy Cider. For tonight I'll merry be, we'll knock the milk churns over and roll them in the clover and there's still more cider in the jar.
That's brilliant. I do remember that band.
It's like folk,
vaguely.
It's like, yeah, English folk music.
It is.
You know, which pretty much died out.
Yeah.
You know?
It's funny. It's funny though, hearing you do the West Country accent, which you do very well as a London boy, as a Southern boy. I'm a Southern girl, but I lived in Norwich for a little while in Norfolk.
Yeah, really?
And they have a weirdly similar accent. I know. And but that's always okay. See if you can answer this.
Have you got a Lloyd boy?
Are you a Lloyd boy? You got
a
Lloyd
boy?
Yeah, I can't read. I can't write, but I can drive a tractor. I know all the little sayings. And when I moved there, all my school friends took the piss out of me because I talk like this, which to me sounds very normal, but they thought I was a real Cockney, which I'm
so
not.
How do you make out in being in Texas?
I'm generally understood unless they think I'm Australian, but.
Don't you kind of have to slow down?
Yes, for some people I do.
Talk like that. Yes, sir, ma'am.
Sometimes I do for older people sometimes. I'm just very interested in linguistics and accents and language and where things, you know, where people get their accents from and how they evolve over time. And you doing that West Country accent and the fact that the Norfolk accent is so similar has always boggled my mind because there's hundreds of miles in between. There's a different accent every 50 miles. So how did we get these two places with similar accent?
Do you know there was a hit song with that? Have you got a Lloyd boy? Have you got a Lloyd?
Yeah.
Molly Winley, she smokes like a chimney, but she's my little nicotine girl.
You know, I didn't know that part of the song. All I know is, are you a Lloyd boy? Have you got a Lloyd?
Have you got a Lloyd boy?
People say that all the time. It's such a funny accent.
You wouldn't get hit like that these days about smoking, would you?
No, I don't think anybody. It's a vape. Have you got a vape, man? Have you got a vape? That's what the kids are doing nowadays. And now I want to say a quick thank you to my sponsor, The Festive Kitchen. This time of year, you're going to want to know about Festive Kitchen because these are the people that you want for your handmade, feel-good, down-home snacks and full meals. Festive Kitchen not only offers you specialty food, recognizable food, meaning when you look at it, you know what the ingredients are. That's really important to me. But they'll send you stuff that you can take to a potluck, to a family holiday dinner, or even just if you don't want to cook yourself. And they've got those, like I said, those down-home favorite things like pot pie. They've got mac and cheese, lasagna. And one of my favorites that I also like to gift as well is their frozen to bake cookie dough balls. They're amazing. There's tons of flavors, red velvet, snickerdoodle, chocolate chip, gluten-free. I don't even like chocolate chip cookies. I made these the other week. I brought some up here to the studio. They're fantastic. And not only that, right now, you're going to get 20% off with your first order. Go to festivekitchen.com/Deb. Use code Deb for 20% off your first order. That's festivekitchen.com/Deb. And shout out to Specs, who, of course, are my first stop when I'm thinking about attending or throwing a holiday party. Specs, of course, known for their wines, beers, spirits, and finer foods. Don't forget about that. And if you're not a Specs Key Club member, why not? Sign up now. It's super easy. specsonline.com/keyclub. Join in the fun today. Because if not, you're missing out on customized discounts, events, and tastings. We all know the tastings are fantastic and other promotions as well. And if you're thinking about taking some of their finer foods over as a gift this holiday season, a great place to start is Specs Maple Pecan Pie. It's made with Crown Royal, guys. It is delicious. So don't forget, sign up to be a Key Club member today at specsonline.com/keyclub. All right. So going back to Somerset a little bit, you're there. And then when you come to the metropolis of Austin, we're not really, but we were compared to how we were several years ago. Is it nice to just come for sort of a fly-in visit to get a taste of something different? And then you're like, oh, I just can't wait to get back to Somerset.
Well, I mean, Austin's quite a cultivated place, isn't it? And it has some beautiful areas and the river. And it's got quite a lot of trees. I mean, it's had a lot of development, but it's not quite the concrete blocks that you see in Dallas or something.
We're lucky we've got the green belt, and actually the city and parks department are trying to get more public land being used for parks in town. So we are quite lucky that we're quite outdoorsy.
Good luck on that one.
They're trying.
Well, a lot of the clubs that I knew have already closed. Well, obviously we've had COVID.
Yeah,
stuff.
That was, yeah, you've probably played here a bunch or at least gone to a lot of these venues, and it is really sad.
The first time I came in the 70s, I played at a club called Mother Earth.
Oh yeah, I've never heard of that.
No, you wouldn't have done.
No, I came here in 2000, so I know a lot of them, but not a lot of these older ones.
Which shut a long time ago, but old timers might remember it. Well, the armadillo was the big one, wasn't it?
I remember that was hearing about that popular one. Yeah, I wasn't here for that.
Yeah. But anyway, you know, it's great coming here, and people have been. I put out this book and record, and there was I had a promotional guy, Brian O'Keefe, I think his name. No, you're O'Keefe.
I'm
Brian
O'Keefe, yeah.
O something. And he put out some publicity, and I've had done a lot of stuff on Zoom and interviews, and I've been really actually really knocked out, because I was kind of half expecting loads and loads of questions about my brother and the Rolling Stones and all that, but quite a lot of people have picked up on other aspects of the book, just different aspects of it, and sometimes quite ordinary things. Things about my parents, childhood, my travels quite extensively. And, it's been very interesting for me, because I suppose there's a lot of stuff in a book, so people can zone into anything they're interested in.
Yeah.
So I was really, I've been really pleased by the response. That people have found it a quite, what's the word, refreshing, or, you know, not pretentious, maybe.
No, it's not.
Pretentious.
The way your writing style is very much conversational, which I think is really enjoyable in reading a book. It's not something that... it's going to make your eyes crossed trying to make sense of anything. It's really...
Oh, I was hoping it was quite intellectual.
No, that's not highbrow at all.
That's a shame, Deborah.
It's 10 and unders, you can read this book. No, it is. It's just really, it's pleasant. It's like having a conversation with you, which is an interesting way to learn about someone's life.
Yeah, and I did try to draw on a few other aspects of it, because what they say when you write a book is, if someone's interested in publishing a book or doing a book, they say, has he got a voice? Has she got a voice? This is what they say. They don't really define what voice is, but that's sort of how you speak. That's what they kind of mean.
Oh, right.
Which is all well and good. But I think there can be more to it than that, because you want to express a political opinion. You might want to express a philosophical opinion. So I don't think there's anything wrong with that. So then as you're writing, you don't necessarily write quite as you would speak, because you are constructing sentences that are a little bit more complex. Mm. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that, but that's not really a conversational style. I mean, I called it talking to myself. So it kind of, it sort of is talking to yourself. So in some ways you're explaining certain things to yourself. But someone gave me a very good piece of advice, a book editor that others I respected. And she said, don't write to please other people.
Well, that was nice advice.
Don't try and please the crowd.
Mm.
Write things that are sort of truthful and that you feel are real and that are meaningful to you. So,
well, I think you can be more authentic that way, and the real stories will come out.
Yeah, if you like it, it's like making records. If you think it's good and you like it and all that, you hope other people will like it. You can't just say, yeah, what's happening at the moment? This kind of sound, let's copy that. It generally doesn't work. I mean, there may be some people that are pop creational things that can happen like that.
Can we talk about something on that note?
Carry on. Ding, that note, or dong, that note.
All right. This is not a diss on this person, and you might actually know him, but I was listening to the radio the other day. I was listening to BBC Radio 2. I have it on my kitchen.
What, over here?
Yeah, I have it.
Or in Texas?
Yeah, in my
kitchen.
You can
get Radio 2 in Texas.
Yeah, it's the interwebs, man. You can do what you want. Alexa will play whatever you want from wherever you want. So, yeah, I'm listening to it and they're playing Rod Stewart's new single. Mm-hmm. And there was a very, very like today's pop music drum beat in there, and it bothered me. And I just thought that's not a good, I just thought that's trying too hard to be something that would be relevant now. I liked the song actually. It was very Rod Stewart, very, very fun. You know, he's singing to some girl about doing something. I don't know. I can't remember the lyrics, but I thought that it was a bit juxtaposed having Rod Stewart with this super very, you know, 2020s bass line, drum and bass line. Uh-huh. And I just thought that, you know, people like, saying that though, okay, I'll correct myself here. People like Elton John and Dua Lipa, you know, then the remix or that the mashup that they do right now of Cold Cold Heart is doing really well. It hit number one in the UK, and that's very modern. But I think it's like downplayed modern. You know, it's not. I don't understand how the Rod Stewart one. It seemed like it was trying too hard to speak to younger people.
Well, I thing is with music, I know what I can do and I know what I can't do. So what I can do is do kind of music where people like, sort of like, not really haven't changed for like since I first made my first record in the 1970s. I mean, albeit that was on tape and now you can get a click. I mean, the difference is now between the old days and now is you've got a click track. So You got an electronic metronome. So as soon as you put that click track on, dick, 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 you don't have to hear it if you're playing guitar or singing, but the drummer hears it. So as soon as you got that, you're on a grid system. So you're on a computer. So you can squeeze it, you can move it like that. In the old days, you just had to keep as steady as you could. So quite often you do a take and you say, well, that's a really good take. It speeds up a bit at the end. Oh, should we do it again? This is always the thing, to be steady. Quite often when you do play songs, you do kind of slightly speed up at the end. It's a sort of natural thing. But of course, now everyone has a click track. But what I'm saying is, what I like is, I like a real person playing the drums.
Yeah.
There's no trips on it. There's no repetitive loops, samples. I got on this album Mixing Up the Medicine is a double bass most all the tracks, which is really old fashioned.
That's interesting. It's
a great sound. We got some funky bass on some of them, which Charlie played overdub. And then, you know, guitar, it's all real instruments. So I kind of know how to do that. And the older you get, the better you get kind of at it, the more experience you have a little bit like that. So I kind of know how to do that. If I wanted to go and to put rap in the middle of it and samples and all that,
please.
I probably wouldn't do it very well. So there's absolutely pointless me even trying it.
Yeah.
And so
when I
put this record out, so a few people said, it was that your lockdown record? And well, no, because I took 2019 off to write this book. And also did the record around the same time. So we're all in studio at the same time, all the musicians, and we did 7 tracks in 2 days in the studios.
Wow.
Without rehearsing, because we didn't have time to rehearse. We sent them the tracks. So they're all very good players. They're like studio session musicians, like in the old days, you hire session players. They were so good and they were efficient and they knew what they were doing. So you do a song, you work on it for 2 hours or something, that would be the take. You know, you had 2 takes and you choose one. So we did 7 tracks and we're all in the studio together. It was well arranged and well recorded. And when I put the record out, and quite a lot of people across America started coming back to me, I kind of got the feeling that they were going, wow, we really like this record. And I think they really liked the record because it was kind of like a record you could have put out a long time ago. One guy said, hey, Bing Crosby could have done that number. You know, it's a bit of like jazz trio kind of swing thing. And they were kind of they're quite well constructed songs with some quite interesting lyrics, dare I say. And they kind of went, wow, this is kind of real music. We really like this. Because I don't think there's that much stuff like that coming out. I don't know if I'm right or not.
I think a lot of artists, like I just mentioned a couple British artists there, I think sometimes they try and reinvent themselves a lot. And I think hardcore fans of, you know, old 70s, 80s rock music really still like that sound and are really thrilled when something like that is still around or new artists put out new music that is harkens back to that era without trying to be too modern. I think it appeals to people's sensibilities if that's their niche.
Well, you know, the thing is, Deborah, that I last I ran into Tim Rees. He's playing sax with the Rolling Stones, so I know Tim, And I did a tour in New Zealand, and he was on this tour. And I played some songs on this little tour. It was just around some small venues, and he was there. And I played some solo songs, you know, just me and the guitar. And then I said, I'm going to do Blue Skies, you know, which was it's a classic. It was in the 1920 something, the jazz singer, which was the first
jazz talkie, singer,
right? Mm-hmm. And you know, blue skies, nothing but blue skies. And I'm famously Willie Nelson. So many people recorded it. And he came and played soprano sax on it. And people went, wow, that's beautiful. What a lovely thing you did there. And you go, yeah, that was a good song in 1920 something. It's a good song today. So, you know, a good tune is a good tune.
Yeah.
But there, having said that, you know, there are a lot of people now coming out with stuff what sound like what my parents would have said. I can't hear a tune there. What's the tune? I had a wonderful Scottish fiddle player, Robin McKidd. I learned a lot of stuff from. And I remember we were going around London, so we went to a bar, see a band for have a drink, and they were banging away or something. And Robin said, he stood there and he said, for about a minute or two we were there, he said, I kind of hear a tune there, and we were off.
We do turn into our parents, unfortunately.
Because the fiddle, I discovered in the 1990s, I made a comeback album called Atcha, and it was like 19 years between albums. And I had a kind of Cajun Zydeco influence on it, very much Louisiana, you know, Tex-Mex, all that stuff, which I love, all that music. And I said, well, this music will never be in fashion because it will never be out of fashion because it never was in fashion in the first place.
It's very true. But and how did you get into that type of music?
And I love that because, you know, the fiddle, well, you know, you're Irish. You can play a ding, jing, 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 and the fiddle kind of dun, da, 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 that's the change. Da, 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 da. That's all there is. You're just playing one chord and the fiddle's dancing away, making these beautiful songs and, you know, subtle changes in the melody. And I kind of veered away from this heavy guitar. I got really bored with this riff, heavy guitar, jang, jang, jang. It's been done to death. And so in the 1990s, the only guitar was, you know, little touches of guitar, but mostly it's fiddle, accordion, a little bit of piano, you know, a bit of a mixture. You know, and I had some Irish friends of mine on there. I had a great Irish guitar player, Ed Dean, on there. I had an Irish drummer.
And today's show is made possible by the fine folks at Refine Aesthetics. They're a premier boutique med spa downtown Austin. And these are veteran practitioners, years and years, decades of experience with these folks that work at Refine. They're going to make you feel good by making you look the best that you can. Courtney is the owner, the director, the physician's assistant that runs Refine Aesthetics. And she did this great skin treatment on me a couple months ago. I love the results. You start seeing more results as time goes on too. So I swear every week, I'm like, look at that. You're looking a little tighter over here, Deb. Get rid of some of those fine lines and wrinkles that happen to all of us as we get older. And that was the BBL treatment. That's not all that they have, of course. They've got Morpheus B, that's the non-invasive body contouring. They have Opus Plasma, which helps with so many things such as acne scarring. I know, I've got friends my age and we still complain about our acne scarring. And there are things you can do at Refine Aesthetics to get rid of those issues. Also, go online today to learn more, refineaesthetics.com. You get 15% off your treatment when you mention my podcast. Go to refineaesthetics.com or mention the Deb O'Keefe podcast when you make your booking today.
And, you know, the Celts have got this great feeling for music. And Robin, he showed me the way, as he said, well, that's a Scottish tune, went to America. They used it for this thing and it comes back and we're interpreting it. So he saw the connection between, you know, across from tunes that came from Europe across to the US, French Canadian, they were taken down to Louisiana, and then someone picked them up and used them like that and recycled them. And so I learned a lot from Robin. And the funny thing about this, writing this book, I tell you what I discovered is all my education has been totally informal from other people.
Yeah.
I didn't go to university.
I don't think that needs to be, that shouldn't be downplayed though. Because life education.
There's nothing wrong with it. But I mean, normally people say, well, you need to do a course on that. And I think that's probably, you know, a valid point. And you can go to schools and university. But it happened that I always learn off other people.
Mm.
And so when I wrote the book, I wanted to pay a little bit of homage to some people that, because, you know, a lot of rock biographies, you talk about well-known people and all that and drop names and stuff. And I do that. There's some well-known people in my book. But there's also quite a lot of musicians who aren't really known and that helped me down the way and showed me a lot of stuff. And when I was writing, mentioned their name, I thought, well, hey, I've got to, these people have got to come alive here. You can't just say Robin McKidd, who he? No one's heard of him.
Yeah.
You know, you could say Dave Stewart of the Eurythmics and everyone knows who he is. But if I said Robin McKidd, I've got to then describe Robin McKidd, what he does and all that.
So now I get all these great stories about these more unknown of.
So, yeah.
What musicians?
Some of them, they are known to musicians.
But not to peasants like us. We don't know. We're not in there.
The thing about musicians, Deborah, is, you know, you get before a gig or a festival or whatever, a bunch of musicians get together, different bands, and they sit down and they say, yeah, have we met before? No. Did you play in the 1980s? Did you play with such and such a band? No, but my friend played with them. Oh, I know who you mean. Well, he used to play bass with me. Oh, yeah. Well, I tell you, but he was a terrible driver, wasn't he? God, he almost killed us once on blah, 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 blah. And they make all these kind of connections, like kind of brain synapses trying to join up. And, you know, amongst the people know the singer or the lead guitar player, but who was the drummer, who was all the side men and all that. And I have a lot of respect for them, and also their stories are great, you know. And so I've incorporated some of that stuff into my book, as, you know, anyone that's done these kinds of autobiographical things, you know, and musical aficionados, they're open for it, you know.
There's so many wonderful stories in there, not just about you and your family, but your adventures, the crazy stories along the way. And there are some stories in there that are just like, wait, what did he just say? I have to reread this passage. There's one particular story that you read at the book signing the other day. I thought, hang on a minute, did I just hear that right? And I don't want to ruin it it was the clothing story.
Oh yeah,
I don't even want to ruin it because I want you to go out and get this book. This is going to definitely be on the Christmas list for my mum and dad.
I tell you one funny story. Was it when I was 17? I was at school, and I hitchhiked to Greece, and there was three of us. So we left England, and we got the ferry to Belgium, and then we were going to hitchhike. Well, three guys can't hitchhike.
No.
You know, even two guys hitchhiking is difficult. So we said, let's split up and we'll meet in Greece.
Can't do that nowadays.
So they said, well, where should we meet? In Athens. So we said, we'll meet at the Parthenon. And somebody made a comment. I think it might have been Edith, said she put exclamation mark, because you imagine now saying, but because we didn't know when we would be there. And then the Parthenon is pretty well. We knew where the
Parthenon. Yeah, but whereabouts at the Parthenon?
Well, we're by the gate because I'll tell you why. Because the first day I got there and I paid to go in there. Well, you know, I had only £30 or something for the whole trip. And so it was cost about £2 to get in. So I walked around. My friends weren't there because I wasn't really looking at the Parthenon. I was looking for my friends and they weren't there. And it's blazing hot. And so the next day I went up there and I thought, well, I ain't going to pay to go in again. So I stood by waiting and I thought, there's nobody here. So I went up on the third day and I thought, if they're not here on the third day, I think I'm just going to go off somewhere because I can't hang around anymore. And I went up the third day and then my friend Ricky Hopper, he was there.
No,
I was so happy to see him. The other guy never made it. He got waylaid by some American GIs somewhere in Yugoslavia. I think we went up for one more day, but then we gave up on him.
That's so, you just could not do that nowadays.
Well, you could if you wanted to, but
no, I mean, you could. I don't know. I'd be too worried about three young boys traveling through Europe.
Well, it took 10 days to hitch.
from Belgium to Greece.
Yeah.
Also, that sounds horrible. Where did you sleep? What did you eat?
And but I tell you what, I put this on in the book somewhere, I think. I'm so grateful for the friendship of strangers.
So wonderful.
When I've been traveling over the years, I mean, of course, you can get some unpleasant people, but you try and avoid them. But the friendship of strangers never seems to amaze me. People, and, you know, they help you and you, they help you go here, then show you this and do that. And one time when I turned around to thank the guy, and he was just gone.
Wow.
Couldn't even thank him. People put you up. Oh, yeah, you can come and stay with me. You can come and, you know, I'll give you a ride to ... or pay for your meal. Of course, when you're young and student and that, I think people realize that. And I always try and, you know, I mean, I try and reciprocate that now. I mean, people don't really hitchhike much anymore. But around me in Glastonbury, there's no much public transport. So if you can't afford a car, you're basically screwed, you know. So quite often do people, I pick them up, you know, oh, you want a ride? Yeah.
I've done that before, you know, and again, it goes back to like the musician thing. During South by Southwest, for years, I would, you know, because I live here and I knew where to park and I always had a sneaky parking spot downtown after, you know,
where
the event.
Was that?
Can't tell you. Actually, it doesn't exist anymore. There's a hotel there now. It's a typical Austin story. It used to be this really amazing, sneaky, multi-story. It was very small, only like three stories right by Stubbs, and guaranteed I could get in there every time. And, I didn't live far either, so I didn't mind the drive home. But yeah, there's a really bad hotel there now. But I remember several years, it's 2 o'clock in the morning before Uber, you know, before rideshare, before the little green scooters everywhere. People were just wandering around, not being able to get a cab because we've never had enough cabs in Austin. And I've picked up whole bands, you know, a band of Irish guys. You need a ride to the hotel? Come on, get in. You look stranded. You need a ride? Get in.
Did you tell them you were a Paddy as well?
Well, I'm not really. I was born in England. My dad's family's all Irish, but I've only been to Ireland once, so I can't really claim
to be sure.
It,
to be sure.
To be sure. But yes, you know, the surname, if it wants you, it makes you feel safe.
The O'Clancy's.
O'Keefe's.
The O'Keefe's. You know, a lot of America was very much settled, and the Irish were very, very effective, weren't they, in making America?
Yeah. I mean,
what it was.
They weren't really welcomed much at first, but, you know, just like any new group that comes over to America, they're not really welcomed much.
Do you know that I've showed the Blazing Saddles to my grandchildren the other day, and that, and, you know, it's got all these racial jokes in it. It's full of racial jokes. And, well, they're quite grown up.
Okay.
And anyway, they have all these sort of religious prejudices, and they say, well, you can come and hear him, but no Irish.
Yeah. And now, you know, you meet somebody who sees your last name like, oh, I'm Irish, you know. Everyone's Irish, right? Everyone's Irish. But yeah, back when the poor Irish started getting here, no, we don't want you people. You're smelly, you eat potatoes, you're probably criminals.
You were lucky you had potatoes to eat.
They probably were criminals as well, to be fair. But Chris, for right now, before you leave, because I know you're on limited time, let's just play. We're going to play a snippet of your new video. The single is Anyone Seen My Heart? I love this video. It's very warm. It's you. Is this in your house or is this just a set?
Because yeah, a little set. Yeah.
It looks really cool. But it's you and your brother. I'm glad that you finally let him perform with you because I know he's been asking you for years. It's nice of you to offer your generosity like that. So this is the new single, Chris Jagger, featuring that other guy, Anyone Seen My Heart?
Michael O'Jagger.
Have anyone seen my heart? My heart has run away. And if you catch him, ladies do, return him me, I pray.
That was brilliant. Did you have to give him much direction or was he well behaved during the thing, the shooting?
Well, I can tell you a story about how we did the track. It's because, although I told you the story earlier about we recorded it before lockdown, and then we did sessions in October, then we did sessions in January with the horns before lockdown, then lockdown came, March, because I was in Austin just before that.
Oh, you were? You could have got trapped
right
here.
Right before lockdown. And then, so I needed to do the vocals. So, I mean, I had rough vocals, but I had to go and do the, you know, the really good vocal take. So I ended up doing all the vocals myself. You know, I did all the backing vocals, the bass vocals, double tracked the high vocals and all that. And that was great. I loved it. It was really good fun because I couldn't ask anyone. It was down to me. But then I wanted to get, you know, someone on this one track. So I thought, I definitely want to get Mick on this. So I sent him the, I sent him the tape, and he was in France just sort of during the lockdown. And then he said, well, I haven't got a studio. I can't do it. It's not set up. And he's not really that au fait with all the knobs and buttons and blah, 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 yakka, yakka, yakka. And so he couldn't do it. So then he moved to Italy. And then a little bit when the lockdown eased, he got someone in. He started making some music himself. So then he did do the harmonies with me. And he sent it back to me. And it was okay, but then I said, could you do it again? Because I want it a bit more in there. And so he, because, you know, I tell you, someone showed me a program the other day where the Stones playing a tour in England in the 60s, and the Everly Brothers were on the tour. And we always loved the Everly Brothers. And I think brothers and families and that singing together is great. Mm. And the voices is very complimentary. It's easy to work out the thing. Plus, you know, I haven't got to pay him a session fee.
That's so nice.
So I got him to sing on this one track, and he was great. And so inevitably we came to try and make a video, and so he, you know, he tracked on that because you know, I'm not anything to do with the Rolling Stones. That's a whole mega thing that happens off its own back. But so I can ask him to come and do stuff for my songs, and which he willingly does. And you know, when you've got a family relationship, brother, sister, whatever, you have to do things together. Mm-hmm. You know, whether it's going out for a walk, making a cake, you know, whatever it is, it depends on doing things. It's nice to chat and chit chat and all that, but there's something kind of nicer about actually having a little bit of a project, you know.
I agree.
You know, so these are the little projects that I've done over the years with my brother, got him to sing on things, and sometimes, you know, singing more than just backup vocals. You know, he's sung on a few things of mine. So, you know, that's one way we can see each other and have the opportunity to share something. So, yeah, I'm pleased that, you know, I got him to do that. And he does a good job. So, I mean, I'd love to do like a country album with him, a whole album.
Wow.
You know, something like that, if he's got time, you know, if he wants to do it. But, you know, he likes to kind of keep up to date with everything and all that. And my stuff is more like, I realized some of those tracks on the album, they're like kind of, I'm playing one track and I think, hey, you know, there's one track, it's, and a love like this is oh so hard to find. And I'm thinking, yeah, my mum would like that. It's a quick step. And I'm thinking, hold on a minute. I'm writing songs that my mother would like, you know.
But everything's cyclical.
This is wacky because in the old days you wanted to do things that your parents would hate.
Yes.
And my parents, they liked my music. You know, I did quite a lot of acoustic things, like I say, the Cajun things with the different two steps and all that. And my mother was a keen dancer and that. She liked all that stuff. She didn't really like loud Rolling Stones things.
A bit loud, yeah.
It was a bit loud, mm-hmm, for her, a bit too, oh, dear, give you a headache.
Well, that was a nice, sorry, I have brothers, so that was a nice one-upman for you then over Mick. She preferred the
Zydeco. And they love the sort of piano and violin and those kind of instruments. They're quite traditional, aren't they?
Yeah. Did you have any sense of your parents having a favourite between you and your brother?
Oh, no, very even-handed. Of course, it would have been easy, wouldn't it? I'm really the one who spent a lot more time with my parents because, you know, as we had children, we would go down there for holidays, spend a week there. They'd move to the seaside. So, you know.
You just spent much quality time.
Much more time. My brother too busy and stuff like that. And then, you know. You know, we go down, stay in the spare room. Well, he's not going to go and stay in the spare room. So, you know, it is a different relationship. I think I put it in the book. I'm standing there with my dad and this chap. It was some function do. I can't remember what it was, but you know, my father was quite social. He was in. He was a PE professor. He worked over here in America a bit, and some guy made a beeline for him, and he came over, and he said, "Oh, hello, Joe." He said, "Oh, how's your son doing?" And my dad said, "Which one? I have two."
Oh, that's wonderful. Correct answer.
I was standing next to him.
Correct answer, father. That's a great move. No favorites.
Obviously the guy went,
Yeah. I know for a fact that I'm definitely not the favorite, which my mum will deny, but I'm fine. I know I'm not my little brother is definitely the golden boy in our family.
Well, I say, you know, I got 14 grandchildren. So I kind of some I say, am I your favorite grandfather? No.
Fine.
No.
Oh.
I mean, it's all jokey.
Of course.
You know.
Yes.
In one the other day, you talk about your booster jab. I have my booster jab in my arm, obviously. And then one of them, this girl, and she's very quite strong. She's about 13. And she came out and went whang in my arm. Oh, hi, granddad. Boof.
Did she know you just had it?
Oh, don't worry. You'll get over it.
Oh, it hurts so bad. I accidentally, I did it to a friend last week at the gym. And then when I just had mine done, I was like, what a bastard I was. I didn't mean to. It was like a sharp.
But they're great grandchildren, and not their great grandchildren, but the grandchildren. You know, they can be quite cruel. But you know, they go, "Granddad, you've got a bit of a beer belly."
Oh, cheeky buggers!
So you go, I better watch my weight, trim down. For
you'll
my
be brain. There one day, son. You'll be there one day. Chris Jagger, I could sit here and talk to you all day. I absolutely
could. I think
you
have.
And I've taken up a lot of your time. I'm sorry. But listen, if you're out there thinking about, these are great Christmas gifts. If you've got people in your family who are big, big fans of Chris Jagger and his work, the new album is out right now, Mixing Up the Medicine, the new single, Anyone Seen My Heart, and the new book, Talking to Myself. It's beautiful.
Well, I'm talking to myself.
It's great. I really am enjoying the book so far, what I've got through it, and I appreciate you spending some time.
Are you
time
on page three yet?
Is that the one with the boobs on it? Chris Jagger, thank you so much for coming in today.
We thank you very much.
Well, that was a big surprise. Just thrust upon us at the last moment. We're excited to talk to Chris Jagger, who is in town for his book signing, album release. It was a really fun event to attend. And like I said, some of the stories in that book were just so fun to hear, some behind the scenes stuff. You know, this guy's so talented in his own right, but has all these stories of being the brother of Mick Jagger as well, and how that's affected his life and his relationships moving forward. So it's a really fun read. If your parents are into the Stones, you're into the Stones, you're going to love this as like an adjacent story time from the life of another Jagger. It's a really good read. Again, the book is called Talking to Myself, the new album, Mixing Up the Medicine. You can find the book on Amazon. Mixing Up the Medicine is available on chrisjaggeronline.com. And thank you so much for tuning in today. I hope you all are well. I'm going to go home and lay down on my heat blanket and get rid of the rest of this COVID from the booster. I hope you're well, and I'll see you soon. Love you guys.
Thanks for listening. You can find more episodes and all of our other Hot Pie Media originals baked fresh daily at our home online at hotpiemedia.com, the Hot Pie Media YouTube channel, or wherever you listen to podcasts.